You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. It's January 25th, 2016. You're listening to episode 191. My name's Rob. Right there is Jason.
Right here is Jason.
Right there is Jason. I'm back to the standard intro. You're okay.
You're happy.
Okay. Good.
I realized you've been doing that intro since the first episode.
This basically unchanged.
Yeah.
Hey. So, I mean, when it works, it works.
It was funny because I was listening to the first episode recently, and sure enough, yeah.
So. Yeah, you went back and listened again.
I did, yeah. So it was way not as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, the sound quality was pretty garbage, though, wasn't it?
It was better than I remembered.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I could hear, like, cars and stuff.
Because when we were both shouting into one microphone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still sounds better than I remembered.
Really?
I thought it was going to be like, hey, Rob, how you doing? And you're like, hey, Jason, oh, yeah, 1940s. But no, that's not yeah, how it sounded right, like, okay. Right? That's what I expected.
Welcome to Billy. The game.
That's what I expected, right? But no, it wasn't like that.
All right.
So
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's new? How you doing? How you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's what is the yeah. Hey,
yeah. Good,
so,
good
special,
story, bro.
I have a special message for a builder out there that I wanna put right here.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is he a builder?
Well, not really, but
I hope that he becomes a builder again.
So
looking up the tweet.
Yeah. Daniel Newman tweeted us, and he complained that we have too much chatter at the top of the episode. Other builders have told us they like it. And when we asked for questions today, he tweeted us with... thought that's the part where you were going to say what he tweeted us
with. He says, you guys still super chatty at the top? Because that's why he stopped listening, because right. We were too chatty at the top.
So I just replied and said, nope, totally clear. Come on back. Dear Daniel Newman, still chatty at the top.
Still chatty.
Deal with it, bro.
Chatty as ever.
Yep. So, yeah. But sorry. You downloaded our show and you listened to it. So, boom.
Oh,
gotcha.
No, Daniel, we love you, man.
Seriously, though.
We love you.
Why don't you like us being chatty? I mean, I guess that if you don't like the cool things we talk about, then...
He likes a more focused
right.
podcast.
That's
you know?
Fair.
It's a different flavor.
I mean, to be fair, we are pretty focused. I mean, we
once we
at
get
the beginning,
it.
We have banter,
yeah.
And then we are focused about a topic as best we can be with the knowledge that we have that's limited, and then we talk
virtual
about a game, yeah, virtual non-existence, and then we pitch a game, mm-hmm. And then at the end we might banter a little bit. Honestly, we usually don't. Usually because we've bantered so long in the beginning, we have
we're
to be
to on,
very
yeah.
focused for the rest of the show. So here's something you could try: skip ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
3 minutes in the show, or 30, but no.
On
think
a
we
bad
ever
day.
Banter for more than like 10 or 15 usually.
15 so. Is usually our tops, yeah.
Yeah. But hey.
That's only if we have something important to talk about, like Marvel movies or Star Wars.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which, by the way, I saw again this weekend.
You saw Star Wars again this
weekend? Yeah.
Still good, huh?
It's still real good, yeah. Yeah, still real good.
I actually liked it better the second time.
Did you? I would say about on par.
So.
Yeah. It was, not as big a surprise.
So here's something I was interested in. I'm comfortable enough myself to admit this, but
uh-oh.
The first time I saw it, and this is not a spoiler, but I'm going to allude to something. So skip about 30 seconds ahead if you're not okay with me alluding to something for a movie that you should have seen by now at least twice.
Sure.
There's a moment that's really sucky in the movie.
Yeah, the big moment.
The big moment. Yeah, towards the end. And the first time I was like, oh yeah, you know. The second time. I got a little choked up
did
right
really?
Before the moment because I was prepared and I was like, oh man.
Oh.
So I thought that was interesting.
So
right?
What was being talked about had more weight to you because you knew
exactly.
It was coming.
Exactly.
Okay. Right.
Exactly.
I get that. Yeah, I didn't get a lot of people said they
so,
were choked up.
I mean,
it's
not like I was
things.
Crying, but I mean, I felt it, right? I felt it in my throat. Like I was like, oh.
There were a lot of people I've heard say that there were several moments in the film where they just got a little misty.
Now, my favorite moment in the film, uh-huh. which is like 5 minutes after that. During the thing with the thing and the,
uh-huh.
you know, that thing,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I got the excitement, like, oh, I can't. I'm just like waiting for that to happen. And then so when that I was really giddy. Because the first time you're like, it's going to happen. And then it does. And you're, but the second time you're waiting, it's like, oh, I was
sure.
super jazzed about it.
The one observation that I was upset about something. I didn't notice it the first time. Noticed it this time. It really upset me quite a bit, actually.
And this
is not a spoiler for anybody. Okay. Not a big deal. All right. Okay. C-3PO is in the movie for less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe more like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. That's the right choice.
I know you don't like C-3PO.
I don't dislike C-3PO, but we just don't need him.
Right.
Right? We don't need him. The movie's not about him.
Right.
In fact, they could have removed him from the film. Wouldn't have mattered.
No, see, I firmly believe they need to be in all 9 movies, well, simply because then they'll be the only characters who have been in all 9 movies,
blah, 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 that's cool. Okay, whatever. All right. But narratively, he was unnecessary.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Anthony Daniels' name was in the credits 3 cards before Peter Mayhew. And Peter Mayhew is in half the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, this actually, this is a Chewbacca-heavy movie.
Like, yeah.
You know, I think maybe even more than Han Solo, because of the alternate scenes where, like, he's doing stuff and, like,
sure.
I mean, at least I would say as much, right?
As much.
No, he's probably a little less, because, like, there's the scene where Han is talking to the people and he's not there.
He's in it more than Poe Dameron is, for example.
Oh, yeah, way
more. And the only reason I can think of is that he doesn't talk, right? Anthony Daniels has a speaking role and Peter Mayhew doesn't talk.
Also, Peter Mayhew was not Chewbacca for the whole movie.
Well, stunt doubles, whatever.
No, like, for a lot of the stunt stuff. Peter Mayhew's just, he's older, and that's a big suit.
He's an old guy, and he's a tall guy, and I'm sure but still, I mean, I bet you Anthony Daniels is not in that costume.
No, I think he is.
Well,
they're pretty adamant about that.
Regardless.
So Kenny Baker was not back this time around.
Right,
Because, I mean, pretty unnecessary, because R2-D2 was in the movie less than Z3PO.
But you're still talking about a stunt double.
It's true.
Okay,
you're still talking about
a stunt double for Peter Mayhew. So I was really bummed because Chewie is a major character in the film.
And Chewie's one of the best characters in all of the movies.
In all Star Wars. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, he is a character that, okay, so yes, you could have removed him narratively. You could have. You could have had some other character there, new character, as a co-pilot. But he is as much a part of Han's character as Harrison Ford is. They're a duo, right?
Yeah.
So for him to be farther back in the credits, I was really bummed about that. That's like going back to when Chewbacca in the end of Star Wars, the first one, A New Hope, where he doesn't get a medal at the end. That's a bunch of crap.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Do you hear there's a comic
that explains why I don't care. If it's, I don't care.
It was still lame. It was lame that he didn't get a medal when he was just as cool as everyone else.
Well, it's explained in the book or explained in the comic. I mean, okay, good for the people who read those things and enjoy the expanded universe stuff. Congratulations.
What I say is good for the person who wrote that comic to say that it happened.
To try and make some justice.
Because Chewbacca, actually, they made it super cool because in the comic, like, I'm going to spoil the comic because I didn't read it. I just read it on IO9. But, like, I guess in the comic, like, in the end, this girl helps Chewbacca save someone, and she's like, nobody will ever know this, nobody will ever, you know, and he gives her the medal, like, because she helped save her people, you know, nobody was going to ever reward her or realize it, so he gave her the medal that he won, and I thought that was kind of cool, right?
Okay.
Because that's who Chewbacca is, right? He's a team player, sport. I mean,
whatever.
That's what he does.
You're just trying to write around problems.
I do appreciate that, This is like a screw you, because everybody's always complained about the 12 parsecs thing, because parsecs is distance, you know, and, well, he flew by a black hole. And then when Rey says in the movie 14 parsecs, he's like, hey, it's 12. Like, I just love that they call that back, because it's like, we're not going to hide from the stupidness of it.
Yeah, right.
It was nice.
Anyway, okay,
so,
that's enough Star Wars banter, I guess.
Sorry, Mr. Newman. So, he's not even listening anymore.
He might listen.
He's probably not listening. Tweet us right now if you're listening, Daniel.
I hope he's listening. I miss him already.
There's a show where somebody says, I don't know.
Boy, don't we sound much better this week?
Yeah. Nobody can argue with that. The way it could be sound better. So let's talk about what you've been playing.
Yeah.
So I've been playing this Star Wars game. I'm not even lying about that. But I want to talk about it because it's not about Star Wars. It's a game. We're talking about games here.
Right.
But it's on my phone. It's called Star Wars Heroes, I think, something like that.
Star Wars Heroes.
It just says Heroes on my phone because the name is Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, I think is actually what it's called. But,
okay.
It's a game where you have troops, like you earn your different Star Wars characters, and some of them are like Jedi Counselor, but some of them are like Poe Dameron and Darth Vader. And and it's a game where you do levels where you're fighting against the computer.
Yeah.
But then there are levels where you're fighting against other people. I mean, you're always fighting against the computer. Like as in to say, like against the AI, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's never somebody live playing against you, but like I build a squad and then I put them in the arena and then they're there and people, if they defeat me, I lose rank. And if I defeat other people, I go up in rank. And it's been really fun. It's very much my style of game, and you earn these shards as you play, and the shards let you unlock new characters, make characters better.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. The new characters are very well represented, and they're very cool in the game. There's some things that are wrong with it, like Darth Sidious is in the game, or Emperor Palpatine. They call him Darth Sidious. And yeah. Thing. I presume because eventually there will be an Emperor Palpatine character, because like Chewbacca is called Clone Wars Chewbacca, because I assume there's going to be like OG Chewbacca at some point.
Yeah.
Or OT, sorry, OT. I mean, he is the OG, he OT, is the OG. But, you know.
Right.
Darth Sidious is like the most broken character ever. Like, when you go to face somebody in arena, if they have Darth Sidious, you're like, oh, I'm like way better. Like, you can see your power ranks, and mine's like way above theirs, and I'm like, toast, gonna lose.
Yeah,
sure enough, guess what, now I have Darth Sidious, and now I'm owning because he's overpowered, but it's okay because I have him,
so. Yeah, so he's OP.
Yeah, big time. Yeah,
yeah,
he's the OG OP. So he also has two red lightsabers. Is there any precedence for that in the movies? I feel like he never had two lightsabers in the original.
Not that I remember.
In the prequels?
Right? He used a lightsaber in that battle with Yoda, but I don't remember him ever having a lightsaber apart from that.
Did he have one when he was going against Mace Windu?
No. Huh?
Okay, so.
Because Anakin, spoilers, Anakin kills Mace Windu.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll spoil the prequels all day long, man. Right. Even if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to spoil this.
You know what?
Now.
If you haven't seen it, don't bother.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Don't worry about it.
They're boring.
Yeah, super boring.
So anyways, yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Okay.
So that's just a fun game. It's a nice strategy game to get back into. Mm-hmm.
What are you actually doing when you play?
So you are activating the characters to do special abilities and things to take out other characters. The idea is it's all set up like you're in a cantina and they're all hollow tables.
Mm.
And you're playing the games on those tables. And the main progression of the game is you're trying to get through these light side and dark side battles in these cantina battles, which are three different types of battles, and there's 1, 2, 3 stars, right? And there's 50 levels, and you're trying to get through those and earn all the stars, like Angry Bird style, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the prime thrust of the game.
Okay.
And then there are other things you can do along with that, and you get points for doing all the things daily, and you earn these things, and you can do more stuff, and it's just really fun. It's my style of game, and the fact that it's attached to the Star Wars universe with characters that I know...
It's good for you.
...makes it even better. And,
okay.
Greedo's in the game, and he's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his ability's the worst thing ever. That really makes me happy, because Greedo kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. He does kind of suck.
But it's interesting, because... Like, they have characters like Stormtrooper Han, but not...
Does he say, Uta Buta Solo?
No, he doesn't say anything.
Oh, that's too bad.
He does the stupid ability that doesn't help you at all. I'm like, thanks, dude. That's sweet.
Ukle Nume. Oh, shoot, man.
Really?
I think it's Ukle Nume.
Yeah, that's terrible. Anyways, moving on.
That's like... So, man. So, I used to know... I had a friend in high school who could recite all of Greedo's dialogue and all of Jabba the Hutt's dialogue.
That is dorky.
Yeah. I was friends with some hardcore nerds in high school.
I believe it.
Star Wars and Monty Python were everything to us.
I can get on board with 50% of that. You know me, I don't like Monty Python. I'm sorry, I just don't.
No, that's fine, yeah.
You don't have to. All right, anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about...
Well, what about what I've been playing, Jason?
Oh, have you been playing something?
I'll save it for next week because you want to move on.
Okay, good. I'm good with that. So, totally good with that. All right, let's talk about a topic.
What topic are we going to talk about tonight?
All right, so as I told you guys last week, I entered the Dice Hate Me contest for to get your game published, the game mechanic contest.
Yep.
And it got me thinking about contests because I don't normally enter contests.
Mm-hmm.
But I did this time, and that made me think about designing for contests specifically because they give you a target, right? They say, this is what we need. And we've talked before about designing when like being hired to design something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of like that, except for you're designing on spec, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're really lucky when somebody says, hey, I'm looking for a game, right? For this contest. And you're like, whoa, I have a game that fits that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not published.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. So that's like best case scenario with a contest, right?
Sure.
So what I thought we could talk about was pros and cons of entering contests, the different types of contests we have experience with, and kind of just our overall opinion and maybe some strategies for that. So, mm-hmm. Can we start with the Game Crafter?
Yeah.
That's something we've both dealt with. I've never entered a Game Crafter contest. You've entered a couple?
I've done two or three.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have more experience with that. So do you want to kind of give your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, so going back to Rumblebum, that was the first game that I ever put in for a contest with Game Crafter, and it was my first Game Crafter contest. So, I have not, so I guess they have like two rounds. Like there's a round where you put in all your submissions and then judges look at them all based on your store page.
Uh-huh.
And then I think typically they pick a few toppers. Or no, I'm sorry. They don't look at your store page. They look, the community votes, forgive me. So the community votes based on the presentation that you give. And then the finalists go to a round for the judges, and the judges will look at your store page, and then they'll pick, I think typically they pick three or something. And I think these rules vary depending on who's
right,
sponsoring the contest. And then they'll play the top three that are most appealing, and then they'll pick a winner. And I think that's usually how it's set up, but not every time. But then there's always, typically they're built around a mechanic, a game
right,
mechanic.
Or a theme type thing. Or
theme work.
Usually or a type of game, right?
A lot of times it involves a mechanic constriction or a material restriction, right?
Or sometimes both, right?
Or sometimes both, yeah, right. So like when I entered Rumblebum, it was the 52 card, or maybe it was 54 card goal. The goal was you had to do it with 54 cards or less, and it had to fit in a simple tuck box with rules included or something like that.
Right.
So,
which if it's 54 cards or less, it should, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 right. So just as an example. So I liked doing that. At that time, I did that because I liked it as some personal motivation, as something to say, you know what,
right,
here's a goal that I'm going to put upon myself. And we've talked before, I think longtime builders know that I like to give myself goals. Otherwise, I don't accomplish anything. So it was a way for me to put a goal upon myself to see something through to completion, including it was also the first thing that I'd ever put up all the way on Game Crafter, like
right,
to make it a full product on there.
Right.
Check all the boxes, you know. So it was also a good opportunity for me to learn their interface and learn how to use their site and set up a store page and so on and so forth. So it was good. It was good, and it was a good experience. I didn't win, of course. I don't even recall who won that challenge off the top of my head. But there are some flaws in how that contest is structured, I think, from a presentation point of view.
I agree with you.
Because the goal of the Game Crafter, they're not doing this let's be completely upfront and completely honest with ourselves.
Right.
The Game Crafter is not doing this to try and bring more exposure to designers. They're not doing this to bring more great games to the forefront. What they're doing is they're doing this to get more people to add content to their site and buy printed materials from their site.
Right. And remember, too, that most of the contests require you to show pictures of you playing the game. So what does that mean? It means you have to buy a copy of your own game.
What they say is you have to have your store page has to be live. In order for you to put a game up for sale, you first have to order a copy. Before you can put a game up for sale, you have to buy a copy of that game.
Right. So what they're basically doing is making a bunch of money off people entering.
Right. Right.
Plus you have to pay to enter, right? You have to use your Game Crafter points or something to enter?
You spend your points to vote. You can enter for free, but if you want to vote, it costs Crafter points.
Right.
Which are Crafter points are things you earn by spending money on the website or marketing or whatever.
Right.
Or getting sales from the site. You get Crafter points. So that's why the Game Crafter does it. Other places that sponsor the contest, be they publishers or podcasts or whatever, they sponsor podcast or sponsor contests because it gives their thing exposure. It's a way to advertise in a more interactive way with the community.
Right.
So for designers, there are always a lot of entries, and most of the entries in those contests are pretty bad. I mean, flat out, they're pretty bad.
And part of that is because of the time constraints of the contest, right?
Yeah.
If you find the contest on day one, you've got maybe 60 days?
I think they typically give 90 days.
Do they? Okay.
Which is one of the longer periods of times I've seen in game design contests.
But it's because of the barrier for entry is so high.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a game.
You also have to have art done
right,
and give it time for production and on and on.
Right.
And on. Right. Yeah. I think it's typically 90 days to get it up there. That might vary a little bit. But then I think it's usually another couple of weeks for voting, and then the judges come in. But there have been a few contests that never resolved.
Really?
Yeah. Like Fifth Street sponsored one. And yeah. Then I think that all just kind of crashed and burned, and it ended and never went
anywhere. And some of them say, we're going to publish a game.
Uh-huh.
You know,
well, typically what they say, it'll be considered for publication.
Right.
It's usually how the publishers present that.
And then maybe you get like a GameCrafter gift card, which is cool. But remember, you're spending money to get that GameCrafter gift card so that you can, because you have to pay to enter, basically. Yeah. And I've never done it for two reasons. One, because there's so much to do for it, right? You have to do a layout, and you can't just use Google Art like you can for another contest.
Right.
You have to have art that you own, right?
Because you have to put it up there for sale.
And for me, that pretty much kills it, because I can't do art for myself.
Yeah.
For somebody like you, it's more appealing because you can do artwork for yourself.
It's part of the fun of the project,
you know,
for me.
Yeah. So, so that's why. And then really, you know, like, I feel like winning a GameCrafter contest does not help you a ton towards publishing. I could be wrong. Maybe when you're going to a publisher, you can say, hey, this won a GameCrafter contest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a publisher, I either think one of three things, right? Oh, great. Maybe this is a good game. Oh, I don't care. Or, oh, so you're already selling copies of this game and reducing the market. Sweet.
Yeah, and so, I don't know what the right answer to that
is. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, those are the three scenarios I can think of.
I could think of any, and I could see either any of those three being legitimately considered by a publisher.
Yeah, in fact, probably all three are legitimately considered by publishers, right? Yeah. I mean, depending on the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know when you've dealt with publishers, you've had to take yours off, your games off.
Well, the one, yeah,
right.
Tea Party,
so,
yeah.
Which is fair. I mean, because, like, you know, somebody's going to publish your game, you shouldn't be able to sell copies of your own game on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not a huge fan of that model, simply because I think it excludes a lot of people, because if you are a designer who can't do art, unless you can find an artist who can't design, you're kind of boned.
Right? Yeah, so for me, and I realized all those things that I said about the goal of their contest kind of after that one ended, but I have done a couple others since then because I still liked it as a way to give myself a personal goal, a target to work toward.
Right. You're basically using it to force yourself to get stuff put on GameCrafter, right?
Right, because if I don't do such a thing, then I will never get anywhere. I'll never accomplish anything.
So here's the good news about that.
Yeah.
For you, it works, because when you feel inspired and you've got a game you want to get out there, that helps you do it. So you're, I would say you're doing it for the absolute right reasons, because no matter what happens, you won. Because you've created a game, you put it out for sale, you sell a few copies here and there. Hey, I'm a winner, right?
Yeah, right.
So that, I think, is a really good way to think about it.
Yeah.
If you are doing it just to get a bunch of glory and hope you're going to win and get a game published, I'd say you're doing it for the wrong reasons, only because buy a Powerball ticket, man. You got the same odds. That's not true.
No, that's not fair.
No, but I don't know. I don't see the personal value in it. But if you think it's fun to do that, by all means, do that.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's my thing in the end. If you think it'll be fun to enter that contest, then go for it.
Yeah, why not?
Because you got nothing to lose, you know?
Right.
If you're doing it because it's a fun project, then you should definitely get into it. If you're doing it because you're planning to win and then get a publisher to publish that game, that's the wrong way to make contacts with publishers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that is not an easy 1-2-3 connection.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
And don't think that it will be.
Right.
Because you're wrong.
It might be, right? There's a
chance, but chances are much better.
You shouldn't count on it.
Yeah, chances are much better through other means.
I'm sure there are people who that's happened with. Like, they put a game out there, it sold like crazy, and then a publisher was like, whoa, and then they bought it, right? Mm-hmm. Totally, I'm sure that's happened before. That is the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
So... Right. So other contests. Here, can I talk about one now?
Yeah.
So let me talk about the Dice Hate Me one.
Mm-hmm.
So a challenge like this, right? Here's what's cool. They say at least one of these games is going to get published, maybe more, right? Mm-hmm. Automatically enticing. Dice Hate Me / greater than games. Good company, right?
Sure.
Company a lot of designers like to be published by.
Yeah.
So much so that I read they had over 80 entries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me a little sad because I'm one of those and I wish the numbers were less. But, but I'm glad for them, right?
Yeah.
Now, thinking about why to enter a contest like that? Well, first of all, like I said, automatically more enticing because there's a publishing deal on the line with a good company. That aside, and they're not just saying it's just the top game. They're saying, hey, top games, right? It could just be one, but it could be five, right? Who knows? I mean, it could be 10. You know, I mean, they did the rabbit challenge before where they ended up getting a ton of them. So the thing for me that did this was a couple things. Other than that was, one, I already had a game that fit, right? And I'm actually going to pitch that game tonight. It's a game I pitched before, but I've changed it around. And the changes I made happened to make it fit that contest. And then I rethemed it and voila, it was a really good match. I guess, so in addition to that, already having a game ready, I think if you've got a game that's ready to go for something like that, that's great, because what you're going to get is a lot of people who are going to try and throw something together in the 30 days they've given you, right? Which is hard to do unless you've got a lot of free time on your hands. So especially with their game mechanic, the game mechanic challenge, mm-hmm. that's a tall order.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a very specific thing they're looking for.
Yeah. And it's in it, and you know, it needs to be funny. It needs to, you know,
it's like somebody saying, hey, we want everybody to write this joke, but we want,
it's like, here's a joke, write different punchlines to this joke, right?
Yeah. Or here's a punchline.
Write a joke.
We need you to write the joke that comes in front of this.
Yes.
And we're going to pick one as our favorite, but if we get a lot of good ones, we might take four or five that are good.
Exactly.
But only for this joke.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just happened to have a joke for that punchline. So I was pretty excited about that. It's funny you make that thing, because in the thing it said these jokes, and then it was crossed out and said games.
Yeah, right.
But I guess because their last ones they did were wildly successful, mm-hmm, and they've been mm-hmm. selling tons of copies of
sure.
them. So anyways, that helped me do it because I already had a game ready. But also the barrier for entry was a lot lower. They said, hey, at minimum, we need an elevator pitch mm-hmm. and a prototype rules.
Yeah.
Great. Like that's, mm-hmm. I can do that. Right. And they said, hey, if you've got more, send more, but we at least need that. And we might ask you for more after that. Right.
Yeah.
Now I might have entered just based on that. But I thought, well, hey, since I have more, I'm going to send more. So I mm-hmm. ended up sending rules, the elevator pitch, and a print and play version of the game,
mm-hmm.
With some Google art in it to kind of make it more fun. And then I did things like, it's supposed to be a funny game, right? So you want to try and, if you're going to do something, you want to try and tailor to the people, right? If possible.
Sure.
So like, my game has buildings in it. So the buildings in it have names in the beginning. It was just like, they were prototype buildings. The idea was, so it was like proposal buildings, I guess. So like proposal A, proposal B. And as I'm typing those names, and I'm like, this would be funny if these buildings had funny names. And so I'm trying to think of funny names. And then it occurs to me, why not just make funny names that pander to the judges? Like, make mm-hmm. funny names that are named after their games and named after the judges. Like, right? Because the worst thing is, if they don't think it's funny, they can make it funny themselves, right?
Sure.
But if it gets that extra attention, mm-hmm. you know, and I even put in my elevator pitch, I ended with, by the way, the names in the buildings game are labeled to totally be pandering to the judges. So make sure you check that out.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a judge, I'm like, what did they do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go take a peek at that because I want to mm-hmm. know what they did, right? So I was hoping in that way to get some extra attention, you know,
sure.
and we'll see if it pans out or not. I think it's a good game, so I think that helps. Back to why enter a contest like that? Well, this one I think is cut and dry with, if you want exposure to that publisher, even if you don't get published, just getting your name out in front of them, right? I mean, mm-hmm. maybe they read your game and think, that's a solid game. You know, it's not going to work for this, but that's a solid game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to remember Jason Slingerland. I like that guy. And then next time when you want to talk to them and they're like, oh yeah, I remember you had that game pitch. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, let's talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it can be used that way to open doors, but also just to stretch your design mind, right?
Sure.
The barrier for entry is low enough that there's no harm in going to the exercise. I even heard some people that went to the exercise and they were like, it's not good enough. They didn't enter it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they went to the exercise, which was still good for them. Just like you going to the exercise for the game crafter is helping you further your design, right?
Yeah.
And if you can further kind of your design mind on these, that's mm-hmm. always a win.
Yeah.
Even if you don't win the contest.
Sure.
So let's talk about the bad side of contests. Should we talk about the bad side of contests?
We can do that.
All right. I'm going to let you talk about the bad side of contests.
Yeah. It's been a while, huh? It's been a while since I talked about the tabletop deathmatch.
It has.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've been conflicted about talking about this for a long time, because I don't want to, because I don't know how to talk about it, and I don't want to be a jerk, right? You know, I don't know how to talk about it. I don't necessarily know what to say about it, and I don't want to be an a-hole.
I could lay out Cards Against Humanity cards, and then you could read the ones that best describe your experience.
Well, so, okay.
No, not
so
good.
So, what am I, so, okay. So, the tabletop deathmatch was a terrible experience for me. Okay.
Right.
And I don't know that I've ever come right out and said that on here before.
I don't know. You certainly said it to me before.
Yeah. I don't think I've said that on the show before. And I've been careful not to lie to anybody and say that it was awesome.
I think in person, if somebody said to you, would you enter this? You said, I would not.
Yeah.
Right? Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Obviously, I did not enter again the second time they did it. So hopefully that would speak to my experience from the first year.
And I can even say I entered the first one and I didn't make it to the top. But I did not enter the second time either based on your experience.
Yeah.
Because I lived that experience through you watching you. You know.
So I'm going to talk about this in terms of what I learned to temper my feelings about entering other contests. Okay, so above all else, the tabletop deathmatch, the rules of entry and rules of judgment were poorly explained and poorly delivered, poorly presented across the board from beginning to end. Their original post about what the contest was like three sentences on a website, and it never got better explained than that.
And I felt from watching you that probably that's because they it wasn't better explained even in their minds. Because
they hadn't even figured that out, right?
Right, yeah.
Everything,
once it was going, had not figured that out.
Even everything about that event just rang of a funny idea that they put on the internet and got out of hand,
which is what they do.
But and then they never put their foot down about it. And I think, well, okay. Anyway, I'm losing my focus here. So rule number one for me now when entering a contest is that before I enter anything, I look for clearly defined rules and guidelines and terms and expectations. About not only about what the rules are for entry, but also about what the prize is, because with the tabletop deathmatch regarding the prize, you know, the prize was, was it $10,000 or I want to say it's whatever it was
$10,000 for printing.
Yeah. I think all they said at first was $10,000 toward the first printing of your game. But they didn't explain, they didn't define toward the first printing of your game. They didn't say what that meant.
Right.
You know? And $10,000 toward the first printing of your game, is that strictly for production costs, but nothing for art and graphic design? Their expectation, we came to learn after the fact, their expectation was that you would use that $10,000 towards production as a part of your Kickstarter campaign. Okay. That was their expectation.
Right. And that you would print with AdMagic.
And that you would print with AdMagic.
Which is not a bad thing. AdMagic's great.
But also was not explicitly stated in the initial entry.
But because Shiri was part of the contest, that was that made you kind of...
Was implied.
Well, it was kind of implied. No, again, AdMagic's great, right? But
yeah.
But then you're like, gosh, is that $10,000 a credit to AdMagic, right?
And we were
like,
never told
that. Are they donating that credit?
Right.
Like, that's what made it hard,
right?
Because then you're like, if that's the case, how am I going to get artwork?
So the rules for entry were not clearly explained, nor were we told clearly what the prize was and how they defined the prize. And I don't think they ever actually defined that either. So then also we come into the documentary aspect of this, right? And how the documentary was sprung on us after everybody had already entered.
Right.
And so a lot of people I'm sure entered not knowing that would be a thing. It just everything about it just felt disorganized and poorly executed. When it came to the day of actually presenting the information, it was clear across the board that everybody involved was confused and disorganized and didn't really have a good plan. And then I think in the end you come down to the end result, where they ended up choosing two winners instead of just one, right?
Right.
But they never explained how the prizes would be allocated.
Right.
They never said, are both these people going to get $10,000, or are they going to split it between the two? And then how are they supposed to use that? Under what terms might they forfeit their winnings? Things were never explained, right?
Right.
Okay. So, and I could speak for a longer period of time about that, but I don't need to. Okay. If you meet me somewhere and you want me to talk about the experiences, I'm happy to do so. I've probably already said enough publicly, too much publicly than some people would like me to say.
Right. And one of the overall things that I saw from it, as an outsider, was the time commitment you ended up putting into that for not really getting anything out of it. Right. Because that's something else to think about when you're running a contest, right? Like, how much time is it going to take me? Like, again, the reason why I don't do GameCrafter stuff is because it would take me so much time to do the layout and stuff because I'm not good at it. And you spent a lot of time recording that and being there for things they wanted you there for. And, you know, you also, it was a long time before you got any answers as well.
So then the next thing, for contestants or finalists or whatever, there was no explanation of what they should expect between the time when they present the game to when they hear the results.
Right.
You know? I was soured on those things, on all of those things after entering the deathmatch, and really didn't care for it. And then I think I did another GameCrafter contest after that and had much the same experience as I did with Rumblebum, and that's whatever, that was fine. But then we got to the Grand Con contest, last year Grand Con, sponsored by GameCrafter and judged by several other judges. And all of those same things were present. From my perspective, poorly explained entry requirements, poorly explained rules. The judges, even when the judges came up there to start judging, they were changing their rules on the spot. They're saying, "Oh, well, that's what we told you before. Well, we don't care. We're not going to do that now."
There was that. Yes,
we're going to do it this other way.
Right.
And so you know, also, I mean, people had paid a fee to enter the contest according to the terms that were presented.
Right.
And then after they are
They spent 24 hours
of their time devoted to this to their entry, then the judges at the last minute said, "Oh, we're not going to do it that way. That sucks. That requires too much time of us. So we're just going to make a snap decision right now." And that really angered me,
right?
And I didn't want to make a big deal of it at the time, but that really upset me. That said to me, the judges did not care about this nearly as much as the designers did.
Right. Well, because one of the things was we were told we were going to present our games to the judges, all of the judges, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And instead what happened was the judges split.
They split.
So then in with the way the judges were split, depending on who you presented to, like, for instance, you could present a game idea to two of the judges and they could be like, meh. But the other two judges could have been like, this is gold, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because they basically did was pitch the game to each other, like an elevator pitch of what you pitched to say why it should win or why it should place. So that was too bad. Obviously, I was excited because I placed.
Sure.
And I would do it again. And part of that is probably because I did well. So I feel like it kind of makes the experience feel better.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'll say that's positive about that was it was 24 hours, right? Mm-hmm. I signed up knowing I was going to commit some time over 24 hours to getting it done. And then I was done, right?
Yeah.
And I liked that. And for me, the best part was I ended up with a viable game out of it.
Sure, right.
That has turned out to be a really good thing for me. You know, but that still isn't, yeah. I mean, it's, I would do it again. I know you wouldn't. I would expect, though, next year for there to be much more clearly defined rules.
Yeah.
I would really hope that they focused on that. So as not to give anybody a bad name.
So you know? My point in the end is that if someone who is presenting a contest, and it's easy to say, hey, let's have a contest, and we'll say that this is how it works, and then we'll pick the winner. That's a great thing to do, right?
Right.
It's a great idea, but too often that is not it's not thought through. The people who are presenting the contest don't think it through to the end and think about how their off the cuff idea is going to be seen and interpreted and and acted upon by the people entering the contest.
Right. And that's one of the positive things I'll say about the ones that Dice Hate Me and Greater Than Games have done is anytime they've changed the rules, it's always been to benefit the entrants, right? Like they said, hey, we're going to pick, like I think with the Rabbit games, they said, we're going to pick the top three games. And they're like, yeah, we're going to pick the top six. There's too many good games here. Yeah. Awesome. Like that's great, right? Because then you're changing the rules, but you're actually saying we're going to be more generous, right? It's hard to complain about that, right? So I guess for me, the hard, kind of a recap, the hard and fast rules to remember are make sure you know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. Make sure that it's you see in writing what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't stick to that, don't be afraid to say something about that, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, no, no. You can,
I was just saying, and make sure it's the level of commitment you want to give. And don't be afraid to drop out, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, with the Grand Con one, if you'd been like, hey, man, you know, I don't want to, like, halfway through, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go play games. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Stop doing it. Like, I was having a riot designing the game once I finally got an idea, mm-hmm. Which took a while. And we kind of all group designed, right? We hung out together while we were designing. We played each other's games, and that was fun, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, to me, that was a cool community experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody said, you have 24 hours to design a game, and they sent me home to do it, which is kind of actually what happened with you, right? Because you went back home that night.
Yeah, I wasn't staying up there.
It would have been way less fun, because I don't want to stress for 24 hours by myself. In fact, the worst time I had with that was sitting in my hotel room at 2 a.m., trying to come up with a game idea, and I had nothing by the time I went to bed.
Mm-hmm. And I actually designed better alone. It was just me in front of a Word doc or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, it's too easy for me to get distracted otherwise.
Yeah.
If I was sitting with a group of people and I was the only one designing, yeah, that'd be terrible. But mm-hmm. I was sitting with four other people who were designing and we were bouncing ideas off each other and stealing ideas from each other. And that was fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were making, you know, we were giving each other a hard time. And so that camaraderie, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best experiences I've had. The judging, yeah, was not what they said, and that annoyed me. And it very much felt like, guys, this is going to take so much time. It's not like they mm-hmm. said, hey, let's see how many entrants we get. They're like, oh my gosh, we got 50 entrants. They knew it was a known quantity. They said, there is X available.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think the only thing I would add to that is that go into the contest expecting that you won't win, and make sure that you're comfortable with your input and that you are, that your reasons for entering and for putting time and effort into it are still good enough that you're satisfied with it even when you don't win.
Right.
Because it just sucks, you know. It just sucks unless this is some kind of long running competition or contest that's run annually and has been for a long time, you know, I think there are too many times, there have been too many times in the past where contests have gone poorly because the people organizing them did not put in the effort they should have to make sure it was fair for all of the entries.
Right. And that's what you need to think about. You need to think about the end result. So if you're running a contest, note to self, be super organized and be super upfront. Yeah. And if you're going to change the rules, only change them to benefit the masses.
So I think I've gotten my point across clear. Yeah. I'm pretty well soured on contests, and I don't think I'll be entering anymore in the future. Like, I just think I'm done with it. I've had to deal with too many situations where the organizers were not as invested as the people entering the contest. And that's not fair. That's not
and
the
I
way
would
to
just say that I would be very picky about the contests I enter. I'm looking at other ones where I trust the organizers or know that, you know, like I would enter the Grand Con one again, even if it had its same problems again next year, I didn't put that much time into it. And the fun for me was in the time with the people. Mm-hmm. So good enough, you know?
Yeah.
All right. We should move on. So I need to pitch a game.
Sure.
That's going to go pretty quick. We're already running out of time.
Are we?
Time
okay.
Here. So any questions you have, we'll do those next time, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, we carry those over next.
Okay. So the game that I'm pitching was originally my river game, right? But I turned it into Drafting the Drafting Game. So the idea of this game is that you are a city planner, and you're a super hip city planner, right? And you want to design the most original city you possibly can. So to design that city, here's what's going to happen. In the game, every round, architects are going to give you proposals of buildings, right? They're going to do like a drafting, right, of a building.
Okay.
And they're going to lay those draftings out in front of you, and that's going to make something called the proposal board. No matter how many players are, there'll always be five out there. That's just how many there are. And everybody's going to have a chance to go in a circle, and they're either going to draft a card into their hand, one of those proposals, which is a building, or they're going to play some cards. We'll get back to how playing cards works in a minute, but at the end of that round, any card that hasn't been drafted, as we've gone all the way around, they go to what's called the scrap pile. The scrap pile is a neatly organized scrap pile of every type of card that's there, so every proposal, and they're stacked so that you can see that there's five proposal A's, four proposal C's, right? And each proposal has a different point value, okay? Okay. Still following me?
Yep.
All right. So the idea is that to build the most original buildings, what you want to do is you want to, in your hand, you want to play the cards, the buildings that have the most in the scrap heap, right? Or the scrap pile, right? Because the idea is those are the ones that have been rejected, right? Mm-hmm. So now they're kind of hip. They're retro, right? Because you're going to pick them because nobody else, everybody else disregarded them. So they're super original. So the way you score is you take the number of cards you played, you add up the value of the cards you play. So like, say I have two proposal Bs in my hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those have names. And in the Dice Hate Me Challenge, I gave them names. Like, for instance, the Kirkman is one of the buildings, right? Because why not? And
sure.
The Sentinel is another one. So let's say I'm playing two Sentinels, right? So I've got these two buildings called the Sentinel. They're each worth 4 points. So I add those together, that's 8 points. And then I look into the scrap pile, and there has to be at least one matching building in the scrap pile. Otherwise, I can't do it because it's not original.
Yeah.
So I look at the scrap pile, and there's three buildings in the scrap pile that match that, right? There's mm-hmm. three sentinels in the scrap pile.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, well, 8 points in my hand that I'm playing times three, 24 points. Boom. I score myself 24 points. And I actually, this was originally a 70 card game with two scoring cards and some cubes. And through talking to Jason Gutarski about it, I realized I could make it a 54 card game. You could just score with a pencil and paper.
Mm.
And suddenly it's a smaller game. For this contest, it makes it a rabbit game, which is very appealing to them because it's cheap.
Yep.
So that's how the scoring works. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the game is simply you keep going around doing that. It's nine turns. The game will always be nine turns because you start with the amount of cards that start in the scrap pile is variable based on the number of players there are.
Mm-hmm.
You always start with two cards, but that scrap pile will change the number of cards it starts with based on players so that there's nine turns. So at the end of the ninth turn, when all the cards have been given out, everyone gets one more turn to play and score.
Mm-hmm.
Player with the highest points wins. Now, I added one thing to it based on Katarski's feedback when he took a look at it for me, which was he said there needs to be a card that can screw people over. There needs to be a way to do something. So I took out two of the cheapest buildings, right? And instead added two buildings that are worth 0 points,
mm-hmm.
but they can match any building. Because when you match a building or a set of buildings in the scrap pile, you take those and you throw them away after you've scored the points, right?
Okay.
So if there's a big thing in there of the Kirkmans, right? There's six of those in there. And I just saw you pick up a Kirkman. I could play this building, match to those, score 0 points, but clear them out to screw you, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
That building is affectionately named the Petty. because screw you, TC Petty, that's why.
Yeah, right.
Also, because it's petty to do that to someone,
right?
It
sure is,
and he's a petty, petty man. So,
yes, indeed.
No, but anyways, I thought that'd be funny. So he could also say, hey, that's a super strategic move. Thanks for naming it after me. and again, I only named it after them because of the contest. But yeah, so I added those two cards in, which I think will completely change the balance of how the game works.
Sure.
Because it allows you to really hose other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the scores go from 1 point. There's like 14 of the one pointers, or maybe 12, and then up to 8 points, and there's only four of the 8 pointers.
Mm.
So the 8 points are a risk because you could score a lot of points if there's, say, two in the scrap pile and two in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But the catch being that if you get stuck with those at the end of the game, that's a lot of unused points in your hand.
Sure.
So that's it. The game's super simple.
Okay. Great.
I'll keep you guys updated to see how I do with the contest.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. If I don't win, though, I mean, I had a really good time doing it. And again, it motivated me to work on the game. And because of it, the game is now better because it made me think of adding those cards.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Good stuff.
So we have some emails and comments. We will save those for next time.
So we ran long here.
Because we ran long. So.
Talking about contests.
Yep. So. Hey, we ran long because of the feature, though, not because of the...
banter.
Yeah, so that's That's good.
That's great. Good for us. We're winning. All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook and on other podcast accessing platforms. And
Stitcher.
Call our Google Voice Play. Number. There you go. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, where you can buy our games. And come back next week, and we'll do more of this stuff with plenty of banter.
All right. Good night. Later.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
All right, shine or cheer. Not Michigan, but still delicious.
But still delicious.
Still delicious.
So good we could call it Michigan pie.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly better than the place it comes from.
Yeah.
Texas.
Yeah, which... I mean, I don't know. It could be worse. It could be Arkansas.